for her? She knows everything about me. And I'm not the guy you think you know. But I don't owe you an explanation of how or why I might have changed. I'm not looking for your opinion. I don't believe that you have changed. I think Amber was a revenge fuck for you. Now he was going below the belt. You're really looking to get decked, aren't you? I unintentionally spit at him when I said, "Don't you ever utter those words again unless you want your face rearranged." So then, tell me why. How was it that you ended up with Amber as soon as we'd broken up? Out of all the women in the world you could have been with, you ended up with my girl? I was there for her because you dicked her over, jackass, or so we thought. No one knew your real reason for leaving her at the time. She was shattered. You'd broken her heart. That was all I knew. Amber and I never stopped being friends, even when you guys were together. You know that. Why should it surprise you that I was there for her when you crushed her? There for her equals fucking her? Isn't that taking advantage of a vulnerable person? Again, I don't owe you any explanations. But it wasn't my intention to fall in love with her. Believe me, I tried as hard as I could not to. Well, you should have fought harder. I leaned in and took pleasure in saying, "Best thing I ever did was to give up the fight." He gritted his teeth. "So, that's it? You think you can just appear out of nowhere and steal her from me when she and I have 9 years of history together?" "Out of nowhere? I think there's a little more to the story than that. Do I need to remind you that you stole her from under me? You knew she was interested in me before I left for UF. Yeah, she told me. You warned her against me." "She was innocent. You were not a good fit for her. It was the right thing to do at the time." "Of course it was the right thing. For you. It was all part of your plan." "So fucking sue me for wanting her so much that I was willing to sacrifice our friendship for it. That was how much she meant to me. I couldn't help that I fell in love with her." "Well, I can't help that I'm in love with her now. You threw away what you had because of a bad decision you made. You chose not to be upfront with her. You ended it and left her completely devastated. I picked up the pieces, and you know what? I don't want to give them back. I love every single broken piece of her, and I can't feel guilty about that, even though I'm really sorry about what happened to you after the accident." Rory rolled his eyes. "I bet you are." Shit. He couldn't have been more wrong. I took a moment to step back and gather my thoughts. "Is that what you think? What kind of a person do you think I am? You think what happened to you makes me happy?" An unexpected flurry of emotion came over me in that moment when I noticed the true sadness and regret in his eyes. "I'm fucking devastated for you. You were my best friend at one time. I would never wish that on you. Never." We stood in silence, just staring at each other, seeming to calm down with each second that passed. "Yeah, well," he kicked some dirt, "I still think she'd be better off without me. I just don't know how to stop loving her." "You and me both." We continued to stand face to face. "I guess, in a lot of ways, we're right back where we started," he said. "We both want her, and we both can't have her." Rory paused, looking up at the sky and then back at me. "I know you probably think I didn't care about what I did when I broke the pact we made all those years ago, but I felt like a piece of shit for doing that to you. Not that it's any consolation now. As much as you did me dirty, I honestly can't say I wouldn't have done the same thing if it were you who went away and if she'd expressed an interest in me. So, I can't hold you to a standard that I couldn't uphold when it comes to myself. I actually forgave you in my head a long time ago." "So, if you forgive me, why did you look like you wanted to kill me earlier?" "That was because of you second-guessing my current intentions. Maybe this would be easier for you to accept if you thought all she was to me was a revenge fuck. But I think at this point we just need to understand that the one thing we do agree on is that we both want what's best for Amber, and we both want her to be happy. None of us chose the situation we're in now. It just happened. And ultimately, it's Amber who decides whom she wants to spend her life with. If she chooses you, I'm not going to interfere, and I expect the same from you." I wasn't anticipating what came out of his mouth next. I lie awake at night praying she chooses me. And the other half of the time, I'm praying she doesn't, because I'll never be able to give her everything she deserves. It generally did hurt me to think about what happened to Rory. I couldn't imagine having to deal with that on top of everything else. But I knew Amber. And if she believed Rory was the one for her, his not being able to have children wouldn't deter her from wanting to be with him. Amber was naturally loving. I could easily see her adopting and treating that child like it was her own. Just look at the way she was with Milo. "Don't do that to yourself, man," I simply said. His hardened expression seemed to soften. "Where do we go from here?" "We shake hands and agree not to make this more difficult than it already is." Rory held out his hand to me and I took it. I didn't know what came over me when I suddenly yanked him toward me into a hug. Then we patted each other on the back. "I'm sorry to hear about your mother," he said. "Thank you. She was always so nice to me." "Yeah, she always liked you," I grinned and joked. "She never was a good judge of character." He smiled. "Jackass." As we walked back into the hospital, Rory turned to me and said, "I wasn't thinking I'd be heading back in here unscathed. You disappoint me, Lord. I was expecting at least a bloody lip." "You hurt Amber again, and I'll be happy to deliver that and more. No matter how this story ends, I will always have Amber's back, which means you'll have to watch yours." He smacked me hard on the back. "Same goes for you." The nurse who'd scolded us earlier was watching us like a hawk when we returned to the floor. Assuming our position in front of the narrow window on Amber's door, we could see through the glass that she was no longer sleeping. "Looks like she's awake," Rory said. "I was going to go down to the cafeteria and get some coffee. You want anything?" I knew he was intentionally giving me time alone with her, and I appreciated that. "Nah, I think I'm just going to go on in and let her know I'm here." He nodded once. "All right." I watched as he walked toward the elevators. I'd come to Boston hoping to make things right with Amber. I never expected to make peace with Rory. I guess holiday miracles do happen.
Chapter 26. Amber. Blinking my eyes open, I had no idea how long I'd been sleeping nor what day it was. The grid-like squares of fluorescent light on the ceiling were giving me a headache, as was the smell of the hospital itself, a mix of antiseptic and flesh. That feeling of dread whenever I thought about my current reality started to seep in as I became more coherent. The meds they were giving me were working, but not fast enough. Grabbing for the remote, I turned on the television and blankly stared at the news program that was on. The bed adjacent to mine was empty, and for that, I was grateful. There was a slight knock. Assuming it was the nurse coming to take my vitals, I didn't even look in the direction of the door. When he appeared at my bedside, the recognition of his scent made me realize it wasn't a nurse after all. As I looked up at Channing, I could hardly believe he was here. As my heart pumped faster, I shut off the television. My eyes closed as his hand slowly reached my cheek. He smelled like the outside, mixed with sandalwood. Literally a breath of fresh air in this stagnant place.
"How are you feeling?"
"I've been better," I smiled. "But I'm going to be okay." He exhaled and took my hand.
"Thank God. I was worried sick."
A feeling so powerful came over me. I finally understood what people like Boris and Annabelle had been telling me all along. That there would come a time when what I was truly feeling would reveal itself organically. Inexplicably, I would know where my heart was. It was a feeling that couldn't be quantified, nor was it premeditated. It just happened upon me naturally and unexpectedly. This sickness had knocked the wind out of me, but it had also given me more time to reflect on my life. It wasn't until he was right in front of me at this very moment that I became certain of my truest feelings, that I couldn't live without this man. I'd been miserable from the moment he left to go back to Chicago. "Where's Rory?" I asked. The expression on his face darkened. He was probably assuming that my question meant I needed Rory more than him. The truth was, I needed to make sure that Rory wasn't going to walk in at this particular moment. I knew Rory had been at the hospital almost the entire time I was here.
He went down to the cafeteria to grab a coffee.
The sentiment was practically bursting through my chest. I love you, Channing. He looked shocked, and then his eyes filled with hope once what I'd just said hit him.
You do?
He knew that I vowed never to say those words unless I truly meant them. I love you. I promised you I wouldn't say it until I was yours. There is no doubt in my mind that I belong with you. I've never been more scared than these past few days when I thought I was losing you for good.
What about Rory?
The tone of his question and the look in his eyes reflected what seemed almost like concern for Rory. It was an interesting observation. Of course, the mere mention of Rory's name caused me to start to cry. I would always love him, and a huge part of me felt absolutely terrible right now. But what it came down to was simple. My heart beats stronger for you, Channing. I love Rory. I will always love him, and that's something that I hope you can understand. But love isn't always only about the person who makes you feel the safest, or even how much you care about someone. Sometimes it's about the person who ignites your soul, and that may also be the person you fear the most. Sometimes love entails taking the biggest risk. You're the biggest risk, because losing you would be the most earth-shattering thing. My love for you is different. It's something I can't live without. I learned to live without Rory. I can't live without you, now that I know what it's like to have you in my life. I never want to know what losing you is like. He let out the biggest sigh of relief.
God, I was bracing myself to lose you. You have no idea.
I will never make you feel like you have to doubt my intentions again. Channing's eyes were watery.
I love you so much, Amber. I'm sorry I acted like a dick this week. I was just scared.
I know you were. So was I. It hit me that he'd come all the way from Chicago and left Christine. Who's with your mother?
I drove her to her sister's house, a couple of hours away from us. She's fine. I told her to expect that I'd be gone a few days. I'll be here with you for New Year's.
How did you even know I was here at the hospital?
Annabelle called me. Don't be mad at her.
Rolling my eyes, I nodded. I should have known. He took my hand.
So, what now? Do you think Rory knows where your heart is?
I have to tell him. I'm going to need to talk to him today. He bit his lip, looking pensive.
Okay.
It touched me to see how much compassion Channing seemed to have. He wasn't gloating. He seemed seriously concerned for Rory. Channing lowered his head down on my chest.
I don't ever want to be apart from you again.
He continued to lay his head there as I ran my fingers through his hair. It was a perfect moment. We were in our own world, so much so that when Rory entered the room, I hadn't noticed, until he was standing before us, holding two coffees, and looking like his world just ended. I'd been expecting some sort of confrontation between them, but it never happened. Channing looked somber as he glanced over at Rory. The animosity that previously existed seemed to have disappeared. Channing squeezed my hand and said,
I need a shower. I'm going to head to your place. I still have the key. I'll be back soon.
Then he quietly slipped out of the room, leaving Rory and me alone. When the door latched closed, Rory put the coffees down and just continued to stand there frozen. He knew.
Don't say it. I already know what's going on, and I just can't bear to hear you say the words.
No longer able to contain my tears, I cried. I'm so sorry, Rory. Rory stayed at the opposite end of the room. He looked distraught when he said,
This past week, even before you got sick, you'd been completely distant. I knew you were thinking of him. I knew I was losing you for good.
I tried to compose myself to best explain what I was feeling. There was no easy way to do it. I just had to spit it out, even though it hurt me. When you told me to explore other people, that's what I did. And I found someone with whom I have a deeper connection. A connection that, in retrospect, goes way back. The reason why you left isn't important. The fact is, you let me go long enough to realize my feelings for someone else. Someone whom I've grown to love. I'll always love you, too. I just can't be with you anymore. As much as that hurts me to finally admit. My voice was shaky. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me. He was looking down.
I can't look at you right now. It's too painful. But I want you to know that there's nothing to forgive. You didn't do anything wrong. I just hope you made the right decision.
There was a curtain serving as a partition between me and the empty adjacent bed. Rory disappeared behind there for several minutes. I didn't want to imagine he was crying, and I couldn't imagine how he was feeling. His eyes were red when he reemerged. Rory slowly approached me and took both of my hands in his, kissing them firmly.
Are you going to be okay if I go home?
The fact that he even cared hurt my heart. Of course. The level of respect I had for how he'd handle himself during this entire ordeal was boundless. My respect for him was boundless. Nothing would ever erase the significance of the time we had together. Everyone who comes into your life serves a purpose to teach you in some way. Rory taught me how to love, and for that, I would be eternally grateful. I would pray every night that he'd find the kind of love he was so deserving of, the kind that would make him realize that what just happened between us happened for a reason.
Chapter 27 Amber. 8 months later. Since moving to Chicago, phone calls from Annabelle were always a welcome addition to any afternoon.
Someone wants to say hello, she said. His voice was deep as he droned,
Hi.
Hi, Milo. I miss you. She came back on the line. Wasn't that adorable? He's smiling, too. You're gonna make me cry. I told him we were going to call Amber, and you know what he did? He pulled up an old Daria video on YouTube. Shut up. That's so funny. That's the cartoon version of me. I know. I remember you told me that. Hysterical.
Annabelle proved exactly how much of a true friend she was before I left Boston. Shortly after I was discharged from the hospital, it became clear that if Channing and I were going to be together, one of us had to move. Taking Christine out of the only environment she was familiar with was not going to help her ability to sustain her awareness. As heartbreaking as it was to think about leaving Boston behind, the decision was a no-brainer. Channing needed to be in Chicago. He was my home. I needed to move home. But I refused to go until I could find someone trustworthy to work with Milo at night. It wasn't my responsibility to find a replacement, per se. The agency that assigned me to his case technically would find one eventually, but I didn't trust that they would find the right person. I wanted someone who would stay for a while and really nurture him, someone who would care for him as well as I did. During the weeks that I was still in Boston after Channing returned to Chicago, Annabelle could see how hard it was for me living away from him while I tried to get my ducks in order. She insisted that I let her be an interim replacement for Milo, and that she would also work to find a permanent person. She pretended like she was welcoming the break from her kids in the evenings, but I knew working those extra hours was a sacrifice she was making for me. Since she had the same level of experience working with special needs individuals that I did, I was comfortable leaving him in her hands. So desperate to be with Channing, I eventually gave in. And thankfully, it seemed to have worked out really well. 8 months later, she was still looking after him, but it seemed to be purely by choice.
He's really doing okay?
He's doing awesome. It's a family affair up in here. He loves hanging out with Jenna and Alex. And they love him. They always ask me if he really has to go back to the group home. It's sweet. The big question is, how are you? I miss my friend.
I miss you too, so much, I sighed. Things here are busy. Every day with Christine is full of ups and downs, but every day I realize more and more that this is where I belong. Oh, I know you're exactly where you're meant to be. It's really nice getting to see my parents whenever I want to. They've been coming over some nights and having dinner with us. My parents were really shocked at first to find out I was with Channing, but finally warmed up to him. They had always been big Rory fans. The idea of me with Channing Lord definitely took a lot of getting used to for them.
Have I told you how happy I am for you?
Once or twice, I laughed.
I'd better go. I promised Milo I'd take him to get ice cream. The kids are coming, too.
Have fun. I love you.
Love you, too.
It became clear pretty quickly after moving to Chicago that the place I was needed most was with Christine. It was hard finding a reliable person to take care of her during the day. So, since I arrived jobless, rather than pay someone, it just made sense that I would be the one to take care of her, at least until it became too difficult. You couldn't put a price on the peace of mind that granted Channing, knowing I was looking after his mother while he worked. I knew how hard it had been for him as he juggled everything while trying to find the right situation for her. To be able to alleviate the brunt of that stress was a rewarding feeling. Not to mention, I genuinely loved Christine. Not just because she was Channing and Lainey's mother, but because she was a kind soul. There were lots of terrifying moments, where she wouldn't acknowledge me or couldn't remember where we were earlier in the day, but there were still so many moments of clarity and humor. As her condition worsened, she seemed to get more and more loving and affectionate. That was typical from what I heard in talking to other caregivers of people with dementia. The thing about always having Christine around was that Channing and I weren't as free to express ourselves sexually around the house. We'd take advantage of the moment she was in her bedroom to steal kisses or feel up on each other. Sneaking around was kind of fun, and made our alone time behind closed doors all the more special. Everything leading up to that was foreplay. Not to mention we now inhabited Channing's old room, so it always felt a little naughty to be having sex in his old bed. Even though Channing worked a long day, he always insisted on cooking his mother and me dinner when he got home. He was the better cook, even when he made weird things, so no one complained about that arrangement. Channing claimed that cooking helped him unwind after a long day. He'd pour a glass of wine, play music on his iPod, shake his ass around, and sing while at the stove. Kitty would be weaving in and out of his legs. You could take the cat out of Boston, but nothing had changed when it came to that relationship. No matter what, each day ended with the three of us sitting down to dinner together. You never knew what you were going to get with Christine. Some nights she was fine, others more confused. Tonight, after we were wrapping up our meal, she threw out a whopper of a question. "Can you take me to buy a dress, Amber?" Washing the dishes, I looked over at her. "Sure. What's the occasion?"
"For the wedding."
"What wedding?" Channing asked. Bracing myself, I hoped to God she didn't momentarily think she was still with Channing's father. How devastating.
"Your wedding."
I momentarily stopped washing the dishes. Channing placed his hand on her shoulder.
"My wedding to Amber?"
"Yes, to that beautiful woman right there. You're getting married, right?" Channing and I were not engaged. We knew we wanted to spend the rest of our lives with each other, but it was understood that things were a little crazy right now. Although, the truth was, I would have married him in a heartbeat if he asked. It surprised me when he said without hesitation,
"Yes, we are getting married."
My eyes narrowed.
"We are?"
"I need a pretty dress then," Christine insisted.
"We can get you one," he said.
"Tomorrow?"
"Sure. Maybe Amber can take you."
My mouth was ajar. What was he getting at here? Christine suddenly got up and headed toward her room.
"I keep forgetting there's something I have to give you, Channing. It can't wait any longer."
When she returned, she opened a small red box that had a gorgeous diamond sandwiched inside an antique-looking setting.
"This was your grandmother Faye's wedding ring. She had given me this diamond for Lainey, but I want you to have it, for Amber."
He took it from her and examined it.
"It's beautiful, Mom."
Channing looked like he was deep in thought as he held the ring in his hand. He put it back in the box, and his eyes flashed up at me.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
I wiped my hands on a dish towel. Sure. He took me aside in the living room.
If I asked you to marry me tonight with my mother watching, would you say yes?
Suddenly, my pulse was racing. Of course I would.
Fuck, I know that this is coming across as really unromantic, but I didn't want to do it in front of her, unless you felt you were ready to accept. I'd never want to put you in that position. I know we said we were going to wait a while, but I want her to see me ask you, to be there, even if she can't remember later. I want her to experience that, if it's okay with you.
Wrapping my hands around his face, I pulled him into a kiss, then said, I would marry you tomorrow.
You would? Don't you want a big wedding?
I want Christine there more. Having a big wedding would require a lot of planning. She might not...
I know. That's my fear, that she'll be worse by the time we plan something.
Of course. I ran my hand along his cheek. That's a legitimate concern.
I've known for a really long time that I want to marry you. For me, it doesn't matter if we do it tomorrow or next year. I know you're it for me, Amber.
Why don't we do something small so that she can be there? And someday if we still want something bigger, we can do that too. Or we can just use the money for a kick-ass honeymoon.
You'd really marry me tomorrow?
He smiled.
Okay, maybe not tomorrow, but say, this weekend.
I didn't have to think twice. Yes. He cocked his brow.
Literally. And be careful how you answer.
Yes, literally. We literally took our butts down to City Hall the next day to apply for a marriage license. A few days later, that weekend, my father walked me down the aisle in a small ceremony held at the Ambassador, Chicago. We'd called around to a number of places, and it just so happened that the hotel's amazing rooftop wasn't booked on Sunday. With the Chicago skyline and peaks of Lake Michigan as our backdrop, we were able to put together an intimate celebration with just our parents. By the grace of God, Christine was having a mostly good day, and we got so many photos taken with her. It meant so much to Channing to have his mother there and somewhat alert. We'd bought her a beautiful champagne-colored dress. I wore a simple A-line white strapless gown with sequin beading on the bodice. We chose not to go on a honeymoon yet. Instead, we spent our wedding night like we spent every evening, in our cozy home. Channing had changed out of his suit and was taking a shower when I decided to venture alone to Lainey's old room. Living in Channing and Lainey's childhood house was a very emotional experience. I'd spent a lot of time in that room, which was now a guest bedroom. There were boxes of her stuff still in the closet. One of my favorite things to do was to spend some quiet time each night reading through her old diaries. I'd debated for a while whether it was even appropriate to read through them. Channing was the one who finally convinced me that Lainey wouldn't care. He pointed out that she'd told me most of her secrets, and would want me to find comfort in her words all these years after her death. The journals mostly contain innocent stuff. She wrote about boys she had a crush on or what she did during a particular day. The normal passage of time meant that I'd become disconnected from Lainey as the years passed, but reading her diaries brought her spirit back to me so clearly. I could feel her presence again. It was like reliving my own childhood in many ways. On this special night, still in my white wedding dress and lying on the floor, I came across an ironic passage she'd written the year of her death that made me smile from ear to ear. Today we went to the public pool down on Wellis. It was me, Channing, Amber, and Silas. I'm starting to think that Channing might like Amber. I really hope I'm wrong, because that would be disgusting beyond belief. Amber was wearing a bikini with strawberries on it. When she bent down to pick up her towel off the ground, her boobs spilled out a little. Channing kept staring at her. And this went on for the rest of the day. I'd keep catching him gawking. Anyway, totally gross. My shoulders shook in laughter as I closed the notebook. That was the perfect way to end this day. It was Lainey's way of congratulating us.
Epilogue. Channing. My mother's arms were open wide.
Hi.
Hi, you beautiful, precious thing. What's your name? Lainey. Lainey. That's such a beautiful name. She beamed. And how old are you, Lainey?
I'm 3.
3? She held up 3 fingers.
3.
Would you like a piece of candy? Lainey nodded enthusiastically. Just 1, Amber warned. Mom reached in her drawer for a peppermint Starlight mint and handed it to her daughter. Amber helped remove the wrapper and said, What do you say, Lainey?
Thank you, Gamma.
You're welcome, sweetheart. This was probably the 20th time that my mother had met her granddaughter for the first time. Lainey was a good sport and just went along with it, always welcoming the grand reception she got. Mom always gave her candy, too, so naturally Lainey was thrilled with that. We told her that Grandma can't remember things, but I'm not sure she fully understood. Either way, she never seemed to mind being doted on with the same enthusiasm each visit. It was hard to watch, and at the same time, it was beautiful to see my mother's joy repeated over and over. Mom's condition deteriorated significantly over the years. Her dementia had an atypically fast progression. We tried to keep her at home for as long as possible, but it became too difficult to give her the care she needed, especially after the baby came. We got her into a facility close to home, though, and thankfully, they seemed to be taking really good care of her. Several necklaces adorned her neck. Her hair was done up nice, and her nails were always freshly painted. The women who worked there really made sure she looked and smelled good. I visited her every single day without fail. Amber and I would only take Lainey to see her occasionally, since that was always an emotionally draining experience. Our daughter was conceived a year after Amber and I got married. Since we weren't using condoms anymore, and Amber could never handle the pill, we just paid close attention to her cycle, leaving things somewhat up to fate. And fate brought us Lainey sooner than we'd anticipated. My mother caressed her granddaughter's pigtails.
You remind me of someone. You know that?
Lainey looked just like her namesake, my sister, and even though my mother couldn't figure out the connection, it was comforting to know that on some level she remembered. Mom, we have to go, but I'll be back tomorrow, okay? My mother smiled.
Well, aren't you nice?
It definitely hurt when she didn't remember me. Most days she didn't realize why I was coming to visit her aside from me being some nice guy. That didn't matter. I would still be there for her in the same way that I would if she were 100% aware. We hugged my mother goodbye before making our way home. As we drove down the road, Amber turned to me.
Guess who's getting married?
Who?
Rory.
No shit.
Yep.
I knew Amber still kept in touch with Rory. He'd moved out to Seattle for work, and about a year ago he'd told her he met someone, a widow with 3 kids he'd taken on as his own. He seemed genuinely happy, and that definitely gave Amber some peace.
Well, good. I'm happy for him, I said.
She smiled.
Me too.
As we continued to drive, we encountered a traffic jam, and it didn't take long to figure out why. Turned out, the carnival was in town. We had taken a different route home, so we hadn't passed it on the way to see Mom. But it was no surprise. I'd seen the signs posted all over recently. This wasn't just any carnival. It was the carnival, the same yearly fair where the accident happened 11 years ago. I'd passed it before over the past couple of years, but never with Lainey in the car. She pressed her little finger up against the window.
Mama, I want to go. I want to go.
My stomach dropped as fear filled Amber's eyes. I knew she wanted to give in to our daughter's request. The only thing holding her back was me, or rather her fear of my freaking out. Amber would never suggest we stop unless I insisted. It was true that I hadn't been able to stomach the idea of visiting a carnival since my sister's death. Aside from the brief experience in Boston with Milo, I'd managed to avoid them altogether. But I was a father now, and my daughter deserved to visit the carnival if that was what she really wanted. It wasn't fair to allow my fear to affect her life. My attitude had also changed somewhat over the past few years. Mom's illness had taught me that life was too short to live in fear. Yes, accidents happen, but you couldn't spend your life worrying about the possibility of tragedy. Life was hard enough. I knew it was now or never. We can go to the carnival, baby. Amber looked shocked to hear me say that.
Are you sure?
Yes. I need to do this for her. She placed her hand on mine.
Okay.
One foot in front of the other. That's what I told myself as we entered the fairgrounds. Yes, I was terrified, but all it took was one look at my little girl's face to calm me down somewhat. She'd never been to anything like this before. Her eyes were flitting all over the place as she took in the sights and sounds. That was when it hit me. I had two choices. Freak out, or calm the fuck down and share some damn cotton candy with my daughter. I chose the latter. We ended up playing some games, and Amber took Lainey on a few of the kiddie rides. You know, the ones that were safely planted on the ground. Right when we were about to leave, Lainey pointed to the Ferris wheel.
I want to go up! Up!
Next time, Lainey, she was quick to say. Was I really going to prevent my daughter from enjoying a ride on the Ferris wheel because of my fear? Yes, I was more comfortable with all of us on the ground, but the guilt of denying her that experience was eating away at me. I knew that would be wrong. I pushed the words out. Why don't we all go? Amber's eyes widened.
Are you serious?
Yes, I swallowed hard. The three of us. Amber looked stunned, but really proud.
Okay.
If ever I could take a step like this, it was going to be today. Both of my girls were my strength. With them by my side and the knowledge that my sister's spirit was with us, I could do anything. I'm not going to lie. My heart was definitely pounding as we got situated in the seat and locked in the handlebar. The only real anxiety was on the first go-round. After that, it got progressively easier. Lainey would wave to the people on the ground. With my daughter's laughter in the air, it wasn't so bad. This Ferris wheel ride was like the story of my life. A little scary with ups and downs, but exhilarating and fun at the same time. Suddenly, Lainey did something she hadn't ever done before. When the Ferris wheel stopped, she was hiccuping from all of the laughing, just like Amber. Yep. My life had come full circle, with a few hiccups along the way.
This has been Gentleman Nine, written by Penelope Ward, narrated by Andy Arndt and Sebastian York. Copyright 2018 by Penelope Ward. Production copyright 2018 by Penelope Ward. Production coordination by Lyric Audiobooks. Andy Arndt and Sebastian York are members of SAG-AFTRA.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.